Anyway, today I'm going to talk to you all about Abraham and Isaac. Interesting people they were. So this account emphasizes that God is a jealous God and he will not tolerate any other gods. So we have 3 points here. Number one, we know God has a plan. Number two, God will provide for that plan. And number three, our continued participation in the plan, the blessings from God, hinges on our having only one God. Isaac, in this account, he's a type of Jesus Christ, where Abraham becomes a type of God, the God, Father God. Isaac had implicit faith in his father, willingly submitting himself to be sacrificed. This test proved to God that Abraham had no other gods before God. So let's start in Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 7. We see a listing of the Ten Commandments, and God tells us to, I have a few different verses here. The King James Version says, "Thou shalt have none other gods before me." The New Living Translation says, "You must not have any other god but me." The Amplified Bible Words, verse 7, says, "You shall have no other gods before me or besides me." And the Moffat Translation, "You shall have no other gods but me." Can it be any more clear? None, nada, zip, zilch, goose egg, no other gods, one God and one God only. Anything that we put ahead of God is another God. Anything that competes with God for our time, the time that belongs to him, is another God. It's imperative that we examine our lives and that we rid ourselves of those other gods. Now, God has a plan for each and every one of us, but for that one plan to come to fruition in our lives, he has to be first. My word pad wasn't working last night, so I have words written down on the side here. You either are with him or against him. He has to be first. His overall plan is being completed with or without us. But our continued participation in that plan, our lives continuing that plan, depends on his mercy and his grace, but also us yielding and our humble obedience. We're going to go through Genesis chapter 22. So you might want to turn there. We're going to be there pretty sure the whole way through. An example of the Isaac, Abraham and Isaac. So I want to show here how God made sure he was first in both their lives and what came as a result of that. As we go through this event, keep in mind those three things. God has a plan, God will provide, and that the participation in that plan, receiving of his blessings, is contingent upon where he is in our lives. So chapter 22 and verse 1. "Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. But it has been said that Abraham, more than any other man in the Bible, gave up the most to follow God." Here he is at approximately age 133 years old. It's pretty old the way we look at things today. And he's looking back on a lifetime of tests. He is perhaps thinking after 133 years and all that he has gone through, he has proven himself, perhaps he should relax a little bit, retire, and enjoy his old age. But God has yet the biggest test for him. God does not tempt us. We know that from James chapter 1 and verse 13, but he does test us. Notice how eagerly Abraham responded when God called his name. He said, "Here I am." Very humble attitude. Genesis chapter 22 and verse 2. Then he said, "Now take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him up there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I shall tell you." He says, your only son, the only legitimate son whom you love. Not that Abraham did not love Ishmael, But Isaac was the son of promise, the son of his old age. He was a very special person. And note God's tenderness in his phrasing, your only son whom you love. This thing that he commanded Abraham to do foreshadows Christ's own sacrifice and would come later, has very special meaning to God here. There's nothing absolutely wrong to Abraham loving Isaac deeply, as long as that love did not become worship, as long as that love did not displace God. He says, go to the land of Moriah. God says he will tell him exactly which peak he should use. Moriah refers to a land that contains several mountains or very small peaks. It is what today is known as Jerusalem. Abraham at the time lived in Bathsheba, about 40, 45 miles away. Can you imagine the thoughts that raced through his mind? How can the promises be fulfilled if Isaac is dead? Would this not be human sacrifice like the heathen nations around him practice? Would it not be murder? How is it going to look to Sarah, to his servants? But his obedience was unquestioning. Genesis 22 and verse 3. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey, and he took two young men with him, and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place which God had told him. No hesitation in obeying God's order. He did not try to stall. He rose early in the morning. The willingness to obey God, just amazing. I think more than any other man that comes to my mind, he understood his position relative to God. Abraham was a great man, and he was a just man, and he fully appreciated who and what God is. God is God, and Abraham is a man. He then splits the wood by himself for the sacrifice, and again, think of what is going through his mind as he is splitting this wood on which he is going to sacrifice his son. I cannot even begin to imagine his state of mind, or any of us if we had to do something like that. Genesis chapter 22 and verse 4. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. 3 days they had been traveling. For those 3 days, Isaac is dead in Abraham's mind. Did you ever think of it that way? For these 3 days, this is on his mind. For the 40-some odd miles they walk, each lost in their own thoughts. And Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and the lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. And Abraham says, we will come back to you. We will come back to the young men waiting here by the donkey. Was he lying to these young men? Abraham was the father of the faithful. I do not think he was lying to them. He would have thought this thing through, what God was planning. Genesis verse 22, verse 6. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. The wood had previously been carried by the donkey. Now it is being carried up the mountain by Isaac. Obviously, he was not a young boy, probably a young man, maybe about 33 years old, maybe. Yeah, but Abraham was 133. He was a young man to Abraham. It is this mirror image of Jesus carrying his cross of death up the mountain. In Genesis chapter 22 and verse 7, but Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, Father. And he said, here I am, my son. Then he said, look, the fire and the wood. Where is the lamb for a burnt offering? I cannot help but notice the affection that I see here in his interplay. My father, my son. Does Isaac suspect anything? At some time, they began to discuss what was going to happen. We don't know. And Isaac, he's not dumb. He might have figured things out. This question here may have been asking or seeking confirmation. No doubt he could not help but notice his father acting a little strange. Gets up in the morning, chops wood, they travel for 3 days, make a sacrifice, but there's no animal. In verse 8, Abraham said, "My son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering." So the two of them went together. Abraham, speaking here of the lamb, he means Isaac. Whether Isaac has figured this out or not, I'm not sure. God will provide, it says. Abraham knows that no matter what happens, however it all transpires and works out, God will take care of everything. And of course, later he does provide an animal for the offering and later still provides Jesus as our lamb. Verse 9, "Then they came to a place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order, and he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood." Abraham built the altar, it says. Again, what's going through his mind? I've never built an altar, and I'm assuming you pile some rocks, put some dirt together, lay the wood across. What's going through his mind knowing that he's going to sacrifice his very own son on the altar? I think by now Isaac has the picture pretty much figured out. He knows that he is the sacrifice, and his actions at this point impress me a great deal. I would think he probably even helped out at this point to build the altar on which he was to die. I get the impression that Isaac went willingly to the slaughter. Not that he was eager, but he submitted to God's will. He had complete confidence in Abraham and in their relationship with God. And we see this clearly in this verse, the template of prophecy yet to be fulfilled at this point. Verse 10, "And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son." He is poised. He is ready to kill his son. He is going to kill his son. The pinnacle of obedience, humility of faith. Very clearly, he is showing that God is first in his life. Abraham has no other gods but God the Father. Verse 11, "But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, 'Abraham, Abraham.' And he said, 'Here I am.'" This is Christ calling out to him through an angel, and you see the exclamation point where he says, "Abraham, Abraham." This is not a soft Abraham. Abraham is about to come down with a knife. He says, "Abraham," and he says, "Here I am." He proved his loyalty. Didn't have to go any further. So, because Abraham put God first, he did what God had asked him to do. The fact that we are here today meeting in peace and prosperity in the most blessed land of man's 6,000-year history is due to God's fulfillment of this promise. And because Abraham proved to God that he had no other gods, because of that, these promises were guaranteed. Because of that, we sit here in peace and prosperity, able to listen to the messages and obey God's commandment and keep his holy days. That's an incredible story. I mentioned at the beginning of the sermon that three things to keep in mind. God has a plan. God will provide. And for those first two to happen, God must be our only God. As well as any example I can think of in the Bible, these few verses in chapter 22 of Genesis prove these points. God's plan is being carried out right now in this room. For those on the hookup, the media, as we sit here, we know that God is in charge. But without the sacrifice of Jesus, this would not be possible. We could have no relationship with God the Father. For both of these to happen, the physical and the spiritual, Abraham and Isaac, could only have one God. The fact that we are here today shows that God's first in our lives. Each day when you pray and study, you are showing God that he is first in your life. Abraham and Isaac had power and prestige and wealth far beyond what you and I definitely have in this physical life. We are never going to have what they had. But despite all that they owned, their example teaches us a very, very important lesson. There is no room in our lives but for only one God.